We're rolling.
Hey, what's this shit?
Prepare for a Gopher football knowledge bomb. This is the FBT podcast with hosts MV.
That's pretty damn good. I like it. That's pretty good.
What's up, folks? It's the FBT Podcast. I'm here, this is MB, back here again with Frothy Gopher. Frothy, you survived.
Yeah, I did. I'm about half the man I was 5 days ago. The rest has been killed with massive amounts of alcohol, lack of sleep, and buffets for every meal.
Buffet. So, what kind of, was it? The good buffet, or was it that really cheap, like $5.99 prime rib buffet?
Yeah. So, hit a couple of the buffets. The good buffet was at Mandalay Bay. That was a fine buffet. A little too fancy for me, though. And then also, you know, we stayed downtown with all the classy people. So, had an opportunity there to have some of the $6.99 buffets. I did tweet a picture of an Asian cafeteria style place that we ate at. We got comped at 2 o'clock in the morning, where I had two fairly gigantic plates of General Tso's chicken and beef with peppers. And off to the side, you can see a foot long hot dog, which was also at the Asian cafeteria style place. Didn't make any sense. Had to do it. I was drunk and it was 2 in the morning.
That sounds absolutely perfect. I mean, what could be better than a hot dog with General Tso's?
I got to tell you, absolutely nothing.
All right. Well, enough of the talk about your experiences in Vegas. Well, maybe we'll get a little bit more to your experience of the game itself. You know, there were a couple of Voxer calls that maybe make the podcast as drops. But yeah, Gophers are 1-0 at the time in which it happened. Which it ended at 2:30 in the morning Central Standard Time. I, along with everybody else in Gopher Nation, was wringing all of the hands and gnashing all of the teeth about how possibly we could go to triple overtime with UNLV and just barely squeak out by the skin of our teeth with a victory over the Don't Call 'Em Runnin' Rebels. But I have to say this. After watching the opening slate of Big Ten games, where basically every single Big Ten team and numerous other teams around the country struggled mightily against inferior opponents in week one. I, for one, I am glad that we actually have a victory. And in context, things don't look quite as bad as, say, I don't know, Penn State? Michigan?
I completely and totally agree. I was absolutely devastated after the game, during the game. I was absolutely just beside myself with rage. How could we be, you know, how could we possibly lose to this awful, awful team? And then you see what happens yesterday and, you know, Wisconsin scraping by, you know, at home against an FCS team, you know, Iowa really requiring, you know, the last, you know, they were losing the entire game, but for the last minute where they finally went ahead. Certainly Penn State getting, you know, housed at home by Ohio isn't great. So, you know, I think to a certain extent, you can't read an awful lot into what happened this week. I think the teams, you know, aren't performing probably as high as they will be later in the season, just working out some pregame jitters. But, you know, I think the point's been made a few times about the Gophers. You know, the players that didn't play their best games as Gophers were Marquise Gray. Studemeier, though, he played very, very well. You know, the muffed punt is pretty inexcusable. The pass interference call immediately after the muffed punt was pretty rough as well. You know, those two guys aren't going to play bad games every single week. So, you know, I think you can look at our defensive performance and say, wow, that's, you know, maybe the best defensive performance we've seen from the Gophers in a few years, maybe more than a few years. You can look at Gray and say, well, you know, he 337, I think, total yards. It's not a bad game by any stretch of the imagination, but he didn't look great. I think Nate Sandell said that he missed 9 open receivers, which obviously is not something that's going to help us out. But he came through in the clutch in overtime, and you know, maybe that'll provide him some momentum going into this week's game. But no, I was all doom and gloom immediately after the game was over. After seeing some of the ways the games yesterday went, I'm not nearly as pessimistic as I was. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything's, you know, roses, sunshine, and but I've backed away from the ledge, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I was kind of in that mood almost immediately. You know, I had the 3 a.m. post-game bourbon, and I thought to myself, you know, when I look at the statistics of this game, if I looked at this game from about 10,000 feet, I would say to myself, you know, the visiting team pretty much thoroughly dominated the home team in this case, and if not for just inopportune penalties, turnovers, and poor execution, it literally the worst possible time every single time, this would have been a blowout. I think I've counted already from watching the game three times over now that this game really should have been 21-0 at the half, that Gray missed an easy touchdown to Rabe on the very first possession, and then two plays later he threw an interception. There was a play, a cut by Gillum where he slipped and he had nothing but daylight ahead of him that if he had actually kept his footing, he probably would have gone about 50 yards and maybe had another touchdown. And then, of course, there was a play at the very last drive of the half where Gray was Gray ran up the middle instead of running to the sideline when he was running to, you know, the seam or the edge of the box on a pin and pull where he had nothing but daylight. There were only two UNLV defenders on the field. And then the very next play, he promptly overthrows Rabe again for another touchdown. So, I mean, just so many opportunities for the Gophers in the first half to just put points on the board, bury UNLV, because even though we didn't prepare for their, you know, two tight end, under center power, single back offense, you know, a traditional single back offense that, you know, we see all the time at Wisconsin and Hauk ran at Montana. We did a very good job of limiting Cornett to get only a little amount extra of what he was able to get and from not having prepared. So we went all the way back to the fundamentals. I thought we played very sound fundamental defense, and Nick Sherry, what can I say about him other than he sucks? And we limited him, we battered him with our defensive line, which was, I think, a fantastic sign. The secondary played, especially the safeties, played outstanding, and they did nothing. This game, if not for Gray playing very poorly at times, would have been a blowout, and that's what we would have been talking about.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's hard for me to you know, unequivocally state that you know, this is our defense's coming out party, right? You know, we spent most of last week's podcast just eviscerating the hopelessness that is UNLV's offense, right? I mean, and they think they returned all of about 10 receptions. Nick Sherry is clearly not ready for prime time at this point. And we knew that they had a decent running game, but that their offensive line had some pretty big question marks as well. So I'm happy that we got pressure. I'm happy that we kept Sherry off balance. I'm happy that we were able to contain the run to a certain extent. I'm still not ready to say UNLV sucks, right? And offensively, I think there's no doubt about the fact that they suck. And you're right that, you know, but for Gray's poor performance throughout, you know, much of regulation, at least in terms of the long passes. You know, but for that, it's a blowout. But, you know, you could also say that, you know, but for Nick Sherry's ineptitude, you know, we don't win that game. So it's a kind of a double-edged sword that I'm hesitant to play too much. But, you know, again, the speed on defense is significantly better than it was before. I think you saw players like Will Hite maybe played his best game as a Gopher. It was great to see Beal in there. I wasn't terribly impressed with Rollis, but whenever Beal was in there, it looked like, you know, he was pushing forward and really doing what a good Big Ten middle linebacker needs to do. I saw Rollis getting swallowed up quite a bit, unable to fight through the blocks coming out from the offensive line. I don't think Cooper played an outstanding game, but I think he did enough and made a couple of pretty big plays. You look at the speed in the secondary. We've got players there that, you know, it's been a long time, I think. You know, maybe big play Trey and Tremaine Brock, but there's depth out there now. You've got Wells, Vereen, and Thompson in the safety positions, and then you probably got three decent cornerbacks in Studemeyer, Carter, and Shabazz. It's good to see the depth in the secondary. I think when we talked about it a little bit earlier, that was something that we were looking forward to seeing, and I think they came through. Particularly Wells, obviously came through and had a terrific game and was recognized by the ESPN Big Ten bloggers for the helmet sticker on defense for this.
Woo!
Yeah, we're getting recognition, brother.
So my whole thing about this is, I'm actually, so the way I look at it, yes, we are lucky that we were playing against Nick Sherry and not, say, Alex Carter in the first game, even though Alex Carter had a really awful game in and of by himself. So I agree with this, that Gray did not play well, and if Gray had played well, this would be a blowout. And conversely, if we had played a real quarterback instead of a guy who said, oh, I'm going to bomb it downfield, we're going deep. No, you weren't. You didn't go deep at all, dude. Then we would have probably have lost. This is a game that we would have lost if the circumstances were different. But guess what? The circumstances weren't different, and we had managed to scrape out a win. And for a team of this, for when you're building a team, I hate to use this cliche, but you need to find a way to be able to win games like this on the road. You need to find a way to win on the road, period. And they notched one road win, and they've got their first road win in about 2 years. So I think that's a good starting point. I think that they can build off of this game, both on offense and on defense, and start to build a little bit more confidence. I don't know if Kill, I haven't heard him on the L. Cid show yet, but I'm curious to hear maybe at the press conference this week about what he thinks about this victory building confidence in the team moving forward and learning how to win versus always finding a way to lose.
This is a game we lose last year, MV. So that's a positive, right? I think I read somewhere that, you know, we played USC tight last year and lost. And this year, you know, a full year later, we, squeak out a win against UNLV. So one of the better programs in the country, we barely lose. One of the worst programs in FBS, we win. But this is not a game we win last year. Absolutely 100%. No way. Maybe in the last few games of the season. You look at New Mexico State, there were a lot of the same mistakes that we made in the UNLV game we made against New Mexico State last year. But we made the mistakes this year away, probably a similar caliber of team, and we were able to pull it out. But, I shaved the old head a few months ago, but I would have been pulling my hair out if I still had any with some of the penalties that were coming up. As you mentioned, the timing of them just couldn't possibly have been worse. The false starts on third and short, the roughing the passer penalty after we stopped him on third down, the muffed punt, the interception as we're driving down the field, all of them just sort of happened at the worst possible times. And I think you're right. You know, you can look at this and say, okay, last year this is a game we would have lost. This year we pull it out. I think it shows more maturity on the team. Just the fact that they kept fighting through it. And yeah, here I am, the cliche monster again now. I think you're right. And I think we can look at it and say, okay, good job done. 1-0, won a game. We probably tried to piss away about as much as you could. And let's move on from there. You know, I'm sure I haven't had an opportunity to read anything, but I'm sure there's knives out in Madison right now that the Badgers barely beat an FCS team. I'm sure that there's knives out down in Iowa, and that Ferentz, you know, needed the entire game to finally go ahead of Northern Illinois. So, you know, we look at this and think, okay, let's not read too much into it. We got to win where last year we would have lost. Saw some good individual performances, good play by Gray in the clutch. Let's be happy we got the win and focus on this team in New Hampshire that I know absolutely nothing about.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with all those sentiments 100%. You know, one of the things that I will say, though, that I was encouraged by with this game and what was noticeably different than previous Gopher games or this particular regime over the last year, and the Gophers in general over the last 3 years, was I just saw a better coordination between all three facets of the defense, so all three levels, and then playing more as a unit and as a team. I mean, the defensive line played as well a game as I have seen in years. I mean, you mentioned Will Height before. I mean, Will Height stood on his head with how many times he was just battering, you know, Sherry. He got a sack, probably knocked him down another two or three times. The late hit penalty on him, I think, was very questionable. Yep. Because, I mean, it was a split second when he's attacking him and Sherry throws the ball. I mean, what's a charging 255-pound guy supposed to do? Just lay up the half second before he gets to him? I mean, that's, you know, nitpicking. But I thought Amafula was bringing pressure. Will Height was bringing pressure. I thought Hageman on passing downs was absolutely a monster. They tried to single cover him on passing plays, and that was just an absolute mistake. I thought he held up pretty well, considering this is probably the first time ever that he was double-teamed, and they double-teamed him with consistency. Roland Johnson thought, man, that guy should be starting. Yep. I mean, he really should. I mean, he plays so low and with such good pad level and leverage that it's almost impossible for, you know, these guards and centers to get a handle on him. And he was just knifing through UNLV's line constantly. I can't count how many times he got penetration into the backfield and he disrupted a running play or on a passing play. In fact, on Hageman's sack, he was playing with Roland Johnson. One of the few times I think that they actually lined up next to each other, and Johnson just knifed through the backfield and caused Sherry to scramble. I mean, of course, you know, Will Height and Amafula from the opposite edge were giving chase, and then eventually Hageman ended up getting him. So,
did he get him? He absolutely destroyed him. I mean, it was a beautiful thing.
Oh, just killed him. And to people, I haven't looked at the NCAA rulebook yet, but I don't think you can horse collar somebody if you have your arm on the shoulder and you're parallel to them.
Yep.
If you are directly behind them and you're pulling down, that's a horse collar. But Hageman grabbed his shoulder first. He was standing right next to him and then grabbed him and spun him down. That was just picture perfect, just manhandle, tossing him like a rag doll. Just beautiful.
And that's a 240-pound quarterback. I mean, it's not like we're talking about a 5'10", 200-pound receiver. I mean, it's a big kid.
Hageman just killed him. I talked to a coach after late, sent him through via text, and he said he was so excited to watch film on Hageman because there were bodies just flying around. He would just shoot the gap and just blow up a guy. You know, he's really difficult to handle for an offensive guard on passing plays one-on-one. He's just too athletic. He's too strong. He's too big.
So what do you think about the freshman plan on the defensive line? I was surprised that to see Keith and Ekpe both out there.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned this because I do want to bring this up. I thought Ekpe and Keith played fairly well when they got into rotation. And I understand the whole Clay's Gopher Bukkake effect that we're going to run through with linebackers, defensive line, running backs, secondary. I mean, we get it. Thank you very much, Frothy, for establishing that 2012 Gopher meme. But one thing that I do question, something that I was not happy with, if I can be not happy with a coaching decision, with 5 minutes left in the game, UNLV gets the ball back. We're up 13-10. Who do we run out there for the first time against UNLV when we probably need to get a stop until we can ice this game and, you know, leave with a 13-10 victory? We probably need our starting defensive tackles and starting defensive line. But who do they bring out instead? They bring out the true freshman. They lose contain. They get blown up. You know, there's a late hit penalty that occurs. Next thing you know, they're down in the red. UNLV is down in the red zone like three or four plays, and we're scrambling to beat them to block a field goal. So that's something that I thought was a little bit annoying. But in terms of them as performance individually, I thought they held up pretty well.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that, and I know you've mentioned this before, and I remember reading about some of the critique on the Kill coaching staff, is that they do tend to rotate a lot of players in, that sometimes they rotate a lot of players in at what seems like ludicrous times. Is this one of those instances that some of the NIU fans were talking about with respect to Kill?
Yeah. I would say that it is, and this is one of the things that when I was reviewing some notes on the Kill hire and going back to my Q&A with Red and Black Attack from SB Nation, the SB Nation Northern Illinois blogger, that they do tend to sub out these players at weird times, and this is one of the things that I was worried about. I was more specifically worried about it with running back, that we would actually have a feature back and that we would simply rotate these guys a little bit too much if a guy was the man. But when it comes to the defensive line, I don't know if it was just because it was 100 degrees there and they wanted to keep these guys fresh and attacking the whole game, but they played 9 defensive linemen in that game. And for the most part, I would say that was a good thing. You hate to burn a redshirt on Ekpe and Keith right away, but if they're going to be part of the rotation and, you know, Matt Guerin is going to be on a milk carton, and the same thing with Harold Lagania and Eric Jacques, if they're not going to play, then fine. By all means, go ahead and let those guys play. Maybe it was a conscious decision because Ekpe is quicker and has more athleticism at the position, and they figured that they could get some gap penetration with him versus a guy like Lagania or Jacques, who is more of a bigger body and who would be able to hold running lanes more. Maybe that's the decision. But you're right. When it comes down to, you know, almost 5 minutes left in the game, you need to make a stop to secure this victory. I want my best players. I want my starters on the field. If there was a legitimate reason, if Hageman and Botticelli or Roland Johnson were in fact, you know, needed a blow or something like that, that's fine. But I just, on the surface, I question why that had to happen.
Yeah, I think that's fair. On the other side of the ball, I can't say enough good things about Denell Kirkwood. He was so much fun to watch. It was so good to see him have the kind of game that he had. And, you know, let's just throw aside the fact that UNLV's defense probably wasn't all that great. But he made all in from what I saw, and I haven't had a chance to watch the game again, and we were down close to the field in the end zone, so I wasn't able to see a lot of everything. But from the place where I saw him go, lots of good reads, ran hard, brought the contact in. Didn't see him with an open field make a beeline toward the safety to deliver a pop. I thought he did all the right things, and it was really good to see him. And I think they did go to him. And again, I haven't even seen the stat lines yet, but I felt like they went to him because he was having more success than Gillum. And I think Gillum had a good game as well. But I was happy they kept feeding the ball to Donnell. And he ended up with a pretty nice average per rush, I think.
He did. I can pull up these stats right now and tell you exactly what his yards per rush average was. 6.2
nice.
Yards per carry.
Nice.
So that is outstanding. You know, that is more than just a good job, good effort. That is a hats off rushing line. One thing I will note, so there are two things I want to point out with Kirkwood here. Kirkwood absolutely looked like a different back. He looks more toned and muscly, defined muscularly than he was last year. Kind of like last year, how he was just kind of this bowling ball.
You know,
he was a fatback. As you like to call it. He didn't look like that at all. It's like he had really leaned himself out, and he was quicker. And he actually ran with his head up and his eyes, which I thought was very, very impressive. The second thing was, man, he really, really mixed it up in the blocking. I mean, they were using him as a lead blocker for Gillum a lot of times and as a primary pass blocker from Gray. And in terms of that, I have to give him an A-plus for his efforts there. I mean, Gray was only sacked once. Gillum stood tall. He even knocked off the blitzing linebacker's helmet. You know, I think that was probably the one. It was probably the one play in which Gray actually got sacked, but he did an absolute fantastic job. One observation though that I noticed that they kind of mixed it up a little bit. It's kind of the opposite way in which you thought it would go. They ran Donnell more to the outside into the field, and then they used Gillum to run up the middle, you know, in between the tackles. So I don't know if that was a conscious decision that they were going to pound with Gillum and Gray through the tackles, and that they were going to put Gillum to the side on the side on those QB power option reads. First play, it happened. But, you know, I thought that was an interesting observation.
Yeah. Another guy I wanted to talk about quickly here was KJ May. That guy's going to be great. He is, you know, he didn't, we kind of talked about this a little bit on last week's podcast. He wasn't on the field a ton, but when he was out there and got touches, man, that guy can fly. He has got some speed and shiftiness that you know, probably nobody else on the team has. I'm looking forward to seeing him get more and more involved in the offense here as the year goes on and for the rest of his time here as a Gopher.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he only lined up a receiver today or on Thursday, and then didn't line up in the backfield at all. But you're right; he showed a lot of quickness. He is very much a shifty guy, and he's going to be a weapon. Love the crossing route. I love that that first catch he had where they basically cleared him out, and he just kind of like he was like a dump off in the flat where he just kind of sat down, and then his other receivers cleared the way for him with blocks. Just absolutely fantastic. And one other thing, too, that I do want to mention and get to it right away. The blocking from the wide receivers in the running game, I thought, was outstanding. The wide receivers probably had the most unsung great performance of the UNLV game of anybody on the team. And you're never going to hear a wide receiver praised for his blocking other than from a coach. And I actually thought the wide blockings from the wide receivers on the boundary and in the field were just outstanding.
It was unbelievable. I thought for sure that Kill was blowing sunshine up our asses about AJ Barker. I really, really did. I thought it was, hey, we're gonna give this guy a shout out, good practice player, yada yada yada. Won't see the field. We'll have three catches by the end of the year. But all of the receivers, to your point, were out there working, and you know, they didn't get frustrated when Gray overthrew them, which I think is great, and that can happen sometimes. And they stuck with it, and as Gray started to find his rhythm toward the end of the game, you know, they were rewarded. But AJ Barker, that guy is a man. I mean, that catch on the, I think it was on the home side of the field, going out of bounds there, was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, talk about a guy coming out of nowhere who I figured he'd be hanging out with Garen on the milk carton, but no, he's really shown up, and you're right. I mean, we might not have the flashiest receivers in the Big Ten, but we've got guys who put the work in, and I think we've got enough there to work with now.
You know, another thing too is that I noticed was our receivers were constantly getting open downfield, especially Frickty.
Yeah.
Frickty beat the UNLV's defensive backs, so I know aren't that good, but man, he was getting behind them constantly. And if Gray had even connected on one of those, this is a different game. I mean, Frickty, can't say enough about that. Devin Crawford Tufts, I think, looked actually fast this year. We actually saw him instead of like the Iowa game last year where he kind of slowed down to make that catch. I thought Marcus Jones was shifty. I like what we saw out of Derek Engel.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was unbelievable. We might have, and this is going to sound really weird, but I love our collection of white speed receivers.
Yep.
They're amazing.
We have a chance, I think, to become white speed receiver U.
I think we really do. And shout out to Benjamin J. Dawson, at Benjamin J. Dawson on Twitter, the white speed receiver himself, for coining the term. But yes, I thought that they were amazing. I thought Rabe, when he would you know, split out and then you play as a, you know, your Y or X guy, ran very good routes. The other thing too about UNLV is that UNLV never seemed to want to cover John Rabe.
Yeah.
Ever. If he was, even if he was, you know, playing with a hand in the line, or, you know, as a, you know, in, on the line tight end, or when he split out, they just seemed to just not want to cover him whatsoever.
Well, that wheel route that he ran in overtime, I mean, he had 10 yards of separation from the nearest defender. That was run kind of right toward where we were sitting. And yeah, I mean, if Gray would have missed that, I would have probably thrown myself off the bleachers, but no, he was getting open, and that's defensive breakdown or just good play calling on our side, allowed him to get open a lot.
I don't know if it was just, I don't know if it was just good route running, bad defense, maybe a combination of both, good timing from our play calling. But I, again, wide receivers did an excellent job. Moving on now to the offensive line. Now, offensive line, I thought, was a little bit hit or miss when I went and reviewed it. And this is probably something you can only get when you actually review something on film. I thought, out of all the offensive linemen, Zach Epping and Josh Campion had the best game, by far. Campion was a man out there. I mean, he didn't allow any pressure, was doing a great job in run blocking. Epping just absolutely destroyed UNLV on James Gillum's touchdown run. He blocked not only his man, but he blocked his man into the boundary corner and took him. He took out two defenders with one block. Just absolutely crushed them. And fantastic effort and execution. He was great on his pulls. Did great in pass pro. It was getting, you know, getting upfield. I think he's going to be one of our best, if not our best offensive lineman this year. Epping, you heard it here. And Eddie Olson, I thought, did a fairly good job. Zach Motla, fairly undistinct game. No real issues with anything. I thought the one guy who disappointed with me with his play, because I expected a little bit more out of him, was Tommy.
Yeah.
He had a number of issues when we were running power where he just simply wouldn't get to the spot he needed to get to. And when he got there, sometimes he didn't square up his shoulders with the defender and allowed the guys to get a shoulder on Tommy and then squeak through. It just it's nitpicking, but yeah, I think that we expected a little bit more out of Tommy because he's such a beast. And maybe pregame jitters, maybe it was just the kind of, you know, the moment got to him or whatever. I don't know. This was his first game coming back and playing in about 6 months since he missed the last three or four games of the season. But yeah, that was a little bit disappointing for me.
Yeah. I didn't see any massive issues. Again, the offensive line play is tough. It, you know, at the angle we were at, we didn't get to see very much, but I was happy that we only gave up the one sack, and that was on a blitz, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was on a blitz. The only time, you know, Brian from MGO blog, who may or may not be listening to this, he made a tweet saying that, you know, our offensive line was atrocious because UNLV was constantly getting defenders through. No, UNLV was blitzing all the time. That was the only way that they got pressure. If they didn't bring any pressure, their defensive line did nothing. So,
yeah,
have at it.
We could probably point out some things about Michigan's offensive line too, but we'll avoid that fight for now. From what I was able to see, it looked like it was a pretty good game. You know, I think UNLV's defensive tackles were probably the best part of their defense. So it was nice to see, to your point, the guard play allowing us to, or for Epping to be able to create some holes there. There were a couple frustrating runs up the middle, hashtag RUTM, where I was curious as to why we were running up the middle when that probably was the strength of their defense, and they hadn't really shown any ability to have much lateral speed for the outside runs to contain those. So I was a little confused by that, but I'll check out the film and see if to just take a look at the offensive line play.
Yeah, I think it was pretty good for a first game. I will say that there are definitely a number of things they can clean up, especially the false start penalties. They can do a little bit better job with some of the power blocking execution issues, I would say. They only ran pin and pull once, and that they executed that to perfection, but unfortunately Gray ran exactly up the middle when he should have been running to the field. So I really can't say too much about it. The block from James Gillum's touchdown run, where those were outstanding, just human-like effort from Josh Campion and Zach Epping. But then everything else, I thought the offensive line pretty well overall. So I think that we talked about just about everything, every position group except maybe linebackers and quarterback. And for the sake of this, I think we should probably talk about quarterback.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Why don't you get us started off there?
You know, it's really weird to look at this from a box score perspective, and you see that Gray completed 57% of his passes, which is better than he completed last year. He completed 9 yards per attempt, which in college terms, that's exceptional. I mean, that's what you go for. His quarterback passer rating was 140. So, and when you look at it from a game, you know, an individual game standpoint, it was the third highest rated game of his entire career. So what's exactly the issue here? And the issue, as we've been talking about all along, is the fact that they were just simply so many throws, 9 open receivers somewhat. If you want to go by what Sandell is saying, I from what I've seen, it could have been easily that amount. Just easy pitch and catch throws that a quarterback should make. I'm not even talking about the long bombs and the accuracy on those. It's just the simple missing Rabe on that play action pass when he is wide open on the first drive. Yeah, it wasn't just it was the missing the really easy passes, the pass to Rabe on that first drive, which would have been an easy touchdown. Missing Rabe again on the last drive of the half when Jordan Whiteside missed the field goal. You know, missing Andre McDonald when I know that the defender fell down with that, but that pass even before that wasn't really even on the money. He had another pass to McDonald that really bounced off the hand that I think if he had just been a little bit more precise on it, McDonald would have been able to come down with a really big play. Bombs to Isaac Frickte, 2 of them. I mean, just very, very concerning. And there were some issues with some of the quicker sideline outs, but man, it just... He connects on even 2 of those passes, and whether they go for touchdowns, and this is a completely different game. It could be the point where UNLV, being the type of team that it is in their sort of history, they would have just quit if they were down 21-0 at the half.
Yeah, I agree, and it's tough because he did play a lot better as the game went on, and in overtime, I thought he was terrifically accurate. I thought the first touchdown pass to Rabe was a great one. Got it in a fairly small window. Got it to him and allowed Rabe to get in the end zone. And the second one, I think, was a pretty easy pass that probably you or I could make. Well, I couldn't, but you probably could.
I couldn't make it either. Maybe if I shovel, underhand through it.
Yeah. I would. If for me to play quarterback, I would basically just need to strap a jugs machine to my back and run around. But at any rate, I don't really know what to make of it. And, you know, I think it, you know, given his performance in Michigan State last year, we give him the benefit of the doubt. Accuracy has always been his Achilles heel. But the misses on Thursday were as bad as they could be. And again, you know, I think you're right. This is a completely different game if he makes, you know, 1 or 2 of those passes. But those are passes that absolutely have to be made at this level of ball. I mean, you just don't see that many misses from, a BCS level quarterback. So I think the calls to have to his credit, he hasn't said it, but I think the Fuller tweet calls from last year to move Gray out to wide receiver and bring in Max Shortell are probably not founded at this point in time. With that said, you know, I'd really like to see Gray's accuracy, on those longer balls, get that resolved before Big Ten play starts, because we're going to need that. But at the same time, the numbers weren't bad, right? So you can't say, well, his accuracy was terrible the whole night because he completed 57% of his passes. You know, certainly with an extra quarter of play in the overtimes, his total stats got boosted up a little bit. But, you know, you cannot complain too much about a guy who last year was at a 50% completion rate, now throws for 57%. That's a good thing, and we should be happy with that. But, you know, I'd be interested in breaking down where those completions were. You know, were they all in the 4 to 10 yard range? And what was his completion rate as you move out further? Certainly expecting it to go down, but I'd be surprised to see a real strong completion rate at any passes over say 15 yards that were actual passes of 15 yards, not runs after the catch. So, yeah, that's an analysis I think I'd like to see, and we'll probably take some notes on that when I'm able to watch the game again. But yeah, it's concerning. It's a little bit of a red flag, we'll hope that it improves as the season goes on here.
All right. So yeah, I would agree. I think the issue is on those longer passes. This is something that he spent a lot of time working on during the offseason. I made the mention multiple times in multiple places that he looked like a completely different quarterback because he was showing more touch and he had more accuracy on his longer throws. Now, I don't know if what happened on Thursday was just a regression due to nerves or anxiousness or the moment or what, but this is something that we definitely didn't see during fall camp or even really in the spring. I mean, this was going – some of the misses that he was making were like – beginning of 2011 level mm-hmm. misses. The weird thing though is that they were always like 1 yard off. You know, it's like if he had just like taken a little bit off of it, every single one of these purses or passes would have been perfect. And that's what's sort of both encouraging and discouraging about it, is that you would think that this is a team that you could just bury. You know, you could bomb on these guys if you have even the littlest amount of accuracy. And you could probably put up 45 points. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about it. I know Gray is not happy with himself because he said after the game he wasn't happy with it. I know that Kill isn't happy about it because we missed too many passes, and I think that it's going to be addressed and that they're going to spend even more time going back towards the fundamentals of just trying to get these passes down with accuracy. But you're right. We're definitely going to need to see this cleaned up before the start of Big Ten play. Otherwise, it's going to be a struggle for the offense, I think, because you saw from UNLV, they stacked the box with 9 guys all the time, and we counteracted that with running some plays to the outside with Kirkwood. But are we going to be able to have the same level of success against teams that have faster and better linebackers and better corners? No, the answer is we won't. So we're going to need to improve the passing game, mainly from Gray, and to be able to take advantage of the fact that teams are going to stack, you know, 8-9 men in the box.
Is Gray slower? Did he lose a step?
No. You want to know what I think it was? He was more hesitant last night. Okay. He did a lot of I keep saying last night, but it's Thursday night. He was jumpier. I thought he was hesitant, and he tried to dance too much. You know, I know he's quick, so that's one thing that he is going for him. But he's 250 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Just pound the ball when you're going through the middle. Enough dancing, you know. So I think he is just as fast as he's always been. But the problem was that he was way too hesitant when he was running between the tackles. Tried too much to dance and kind of make something happen instead of just being, the bruiser that he is and just get the yards.
Got it. Okay. All right. That's good. It didn't look quite as quick as he had, but in fairness, he never always looks all that quick. But he is fast, right? So, I don't think Gray is going to play as badly on the deep passes as he did on Thursday. I sincerely hope that's not the case. But I've seen him make long passes before. So hopefully it was just, you know, first game of the year jitters, works it out, and and we're in better shape going forward. I don't know that I want to spend a lot more time talking about the quarterbacks, because the recurring theme is he needs to do better on long passes, and I don't know that there's a lot else to say about it.
Yeah, this is great Sprott's analysis that we're getting into right now. But one thing that I do know that we could probably both collectively sigh at is the play of our special teams, especially punting units.
Yeah. What do you say? It's inconceivable to me that we can't get a damn punter in here who can consistently knock the ball for 40 yards. I'm not asking for much here. I mean, I don't need to see 55-yard boomers with, 7 seconds of hang time, right? I'm looking for 40-yard, consistent 40-yard punts, with an occasional long one, an occasional 30-yard is fine, but damn it, these 15, 20-yard punts are killing us. It sounds like Eldred is the starter going forward now. He looked to be the best, but again, pretty small sample size. So yeah, it's I just don't understand how we can't get a punter. It looks like Orseski's pretty much done. It's too bad for him. The yips are a serious thing, I guess.
Yeah, I would say the yips are a pretty serious thing for Orseski. Not that this wasn't written on the wall when we brought in Eldred to begin with, them. They moved both Mortel and Schwerman ahead of him on the depth chart, and then Orseski wasn't even included on the traveling roster.
Yep.
So, I mean, that you can pretty much say all you need, that pretty much says it all, that Dan Orseski has punted his last day for Minnesota. One thing I did find a little bit interesting was that Kill mentioned afterward, Mortel didn't, they didn't want to punt him because he was having some leg issues.
Yeah.
I thought for sure that he was going to be the guy that's going to win, that would win the job, because he was the most consistent throughout fall camp and actually had a pretty good leg. A little bit concerning that on a team that has four punters, one of them which is our snap holder, out of all four punters, only one of those guys could actually do something decently and was able to play against UNLV. So hopefully that's an issue moving forward. The big thing that I got to say, though, is, man, punting unit or punt return unit had some issues. Major, major issues. Studemeier muffed the punt. I have no idea what Lamonte Edwards is doing within 10 yards of a ball on a punt unit. And he was almost pushed into it by UNLV, in which they almost recovered. That's just bonehead. You shouldn't even be near a ball when it's going to be about to be whistled dead. So very, very sloppy stuff in that regard. That Sunemeyer's muffed punt directly led to one of UNLV's only touchdown in regulation. And just, again, these are the type of things that if we weren't playing one of the worst teams in the FBS, would have been an issue and probably would have cost us lose the game.
So we've heard an awful lot since Kill came in about how he's going to work with the punting team, and the punting team is his charge, and he's working with the punters, and he's going to get this problem fixed. Well, it doesn't really look like it's been fixed. I mean, the same issues that we had last year are happening to us again. And it's failure to execute on the part of the punter. It's boneheaded plays. I mean, hell, there were probably 4,000 Gopher fans there, all of whom were yelling, "Get away from the ball." And then all of a sudden there he is right on top of the ball. So I don't get it. If this is Kill's sort of major coaching, if he's taken the punting team under his wing and trying to improve it and has been doing that for the better part of the last year, why are we still having some of these issues?
You know, it could be just an example of first game sloppiness, which we've talked about before. It's happened. It happens everywhere. It happens all around the country, but it's nothing that should be excused. We're just happy that we came away with a W in this case. But, it could be youth. I mean, Lamonte Edwards is a redshirt sophomore, and I don't know necessarily that he played a lot of special teams last year. I think he might have been a gunner and on some special teams. But again, that's not an excuse either. I mean, if he's been doing this for 2 years now, he should be able to understand that you're not supposed to do it. So maybe that's one of those situations where Kill yanks him off special teams and says, we can't risk anything. We can't have you risk touching the ball when you shouldn't even be 10 feet away from it, and possibly cause us to lose another possession. I mean, that's Studemeier's muff punt gave UNLV another possession after we had just basically creamed them again
Yep.
on a three and out. So UNLV had six 3-and-outs throughout the game. So almost half of their possessions in regulation were 3-and-outs. We were dominating these guys. They did absolutely freaking nothing. And then we gave them another possession from Studemeyer's muff punt, and they ended up scoring a touchdown on it. We also gave them another possession because I think we committed a penalty on one of the plays in which we stopped them again. I mean, it just, again, Murphy's Law. All things happening at just the wrong possible time to make the score skew as close to it did as it possibly would. This is a game that I think if we played this game again next week, even if we were back in UNLV knowing everything we know about them, we piss pound this team by 3 touchdowns. I legitimately believe that. We would be better prepared for their, you know, single back, 2 tight end sets, which we pretty much handled as soon as we knew that that's what they were going to run. They had no answer for our running game onto the outside. Our wide receivers are wide open all over the place. If Grace simply calms down just a little bit and plays like the leader that he was in overtime, then we win this game running away. And Kill even mentioned that today on the Sprotts Huddle, that if we just connect on some of these passes, we win going away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that I think what we can take away is that the punting team and the return team need some work, and so we'll look for. Hopefully, we won't need to punt against New Hampshire. But again, I don't really know anything about them, so maybe they're a force of nature. So we'll look for improved punting return, which hopefully we'll get to see a lot because our defense is going to manhandle them. And we'll look for better passes, better long passes from Gray, and maybe some slightly improved offensive line play. Those are the takeaways from the UNLV game. We get the win. Those are the things that we should be keeping an eye on for the game in New Hampshire this Saturday.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're going to run the ball a lot more against New Hampshire than we are going to against UNLV, simply because they're an FCS team. They're not going to have the size that along the defensive line that a normal an FBS team would. I use the same standard argument basically the entire time. We should be able to focus on building towards our strengths against New Hampshire, run the ball with Kirkwood to the outside, maybe mix it in a little bit, you know, between the tackles, run it with Gray, run it with Gillum, do some play action, let Gray settle down a little bit, get Rabe involved in some of this intermediate stuff because he's a force there, and do that sort of work, clean up that stuff, work on better execution and just finishing stuff. And then on defense, I think we need to get a little bit better play from our corners. I think that safety play is good. I think we need to make sure that we're stout up the middle again. And by that, I think we should. I think immediately Roland Johnson should start moving forward. I think that he's just a load to handle. Not in terms of how physically big he is, but just because he plays with such great pad level and gets so low and can just so quick off the ball that the combination of both him and Hageman as a beast, you can only double one of those guys. So if you double Hageman, you're going to allow Roland to split. And if you try to double Roland, then Hageman can just basically manhandle any single offensive lineman that he faces. I would prefer to see Beal start in the middle. I know that there's going to be some issues with his conditioning and whether or not he's up to speed, but he looks great from what I saw, and I thought he was more than willing to mix it up with fullbacks and H-backs in the hole, and I thought he showed really great toughness weaving through the trash and be able to get through stuff. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you on both counts. I mentioned Rollis a little bit earlier. Didn't look terribly impressive to me. Was more or less kind of a non-factor, I think, for most of my recollection. So, yeah, I'd like to have Beal out there as much as possible. I think our linebacking play was good, not great. I think it was good. I think there were quite a few bodies kind of cycling through there in the linebacker Bukkake. You made the point earlier, and I think it's worth repeating that there was just great sort of kind of playing together with the defensive line to the linebackers to the secondary. There were some things that clearly need to be worked on, but you know, UNLV is not a terrible running team. They're an okay running team. You know, I think they averaged about 200 yards a carry, 200 yards per game last year. And I think we did an adequate job of stopping them. So I don't have an awful lot of concerns on defense. I want to make sure that we can continue to keep running the ball. I'd like to see Gray get better, and I'd like to see some improvement in special teams. But all in all, I think the defense is the high point.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. You know, to be able to shut down a team like this, that, like you said, they are not a bad running team at all. I actually think that they are probably better running the ball this year than they were last. Cornette's a very good tailback, and they have some very good offensive linemen in run blocking, although I think some of these guys were just absolute sieves and turnstiles in pass blocking. But one thing, I'm going to agree with you there. I think that the formula for this team for this year is going to be that this defense is going to play together. They are going to play as a group. There's some very good players there. And that they are just going to keep cycling guys, keep them fresh, and play fundamental ball, make as few mistakes as possible, and then keep us in the game that way. And then combined with our running game, we're going to grind out a lot of games. I think it's good. We're going to be sort of a tougher opponent for a lot of teams because of our style of play. We're not going to give up anything easily, and we're going to make people work for it. But we're not going to make that next step until we can legitimately complete passes over the top with Gray and make opposing defenses pay for stacking the box with 8 and 9. If we can do that, and then combined with maybe get a few more stoppers and get an emergent set of guys along the defensive line, like, it would be fantastic if Deal Wilhite, Roland Johnson, and Rashid Hageman play to the level that they did against UNLV for every single game, because I think we will be in every single game if they can play up to that caliber against, you know, higher quality opponents.
Yeah, and it's not like any of our opponents look like absolute world beaters yesterday. You know, Syracuse and Northwestern, while an incredibly exciting game from a neutral perspective, it's some serious questions on both of their defenses, and we play both of those teams. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens the rest of the year.
All right, folks. So tune back with us next week when we are talking about what happens against New Hampshire. People will not be as a shell of themselves from drinking 5 straight days in UNLV or in Las Vegas. So with that, see you later, folks.